Welcome to the Tech Nori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, Rashmi Malgiri. She is the co-founder of CoverWallet, coverwallet.com. If you're a growth company, tech company, check out coverstartups.com. I mentioned it in the show, and she expounds a lot more on why this was the case. But in my first company, I had to sign up for insurance, as many of you do, and it was painful. To say the least, it was painful. I think I met with four different insurance company brokers in like a week, to no avail, by the way. I eventually signed up online with Hiscox, but even that was a pain in the butt. The reality is, like, and obviously I'm a growth company, so I would fit under the coverstartups.com piece of this, but I only have a loose understanding of what my business does today and what I need coverage for, but I don't know what I'm going to venture into next. I do, but I don't. And that's kind of a scary thing to say to an insurer. In fact, I don't recommend it. They say be honest because it's your coverage, but like, you got to be careful. Because like I said certain key words when I talked to those brokers, and this is like 2014, so the world has changed, 2013. But I said key words that must have red flagged me, and they were like, oh, we don't cover this. We don't touch this. And I would, but like, that wasn't even the most frustrating part. The most frustrating part was actually that I would go meet with these people and then have to reiterate everything that I filled out online. So it was like, what was the point of me filling this out online? Like, is it for your notes? Like, is it just for your own database? I seriously don't know. And obviously since then, CoverWallet launched, and they're sort of, we'll call it the go-between. They're the person that I would interface with online, and they would answer all those questions, and they would set it up, and I'd get a quote immediately, and they would handle all the awkward, whether or not you're a fit, and who's the best coverage insurer for you, yada, yada, yada. And then they just did something even better, which is Cover Startups, because now I literally can talk to somebody who knows the problems that I, as an early stage company, are going to have or go through. So for all of you, seriously, you need some insurance. You need some good insurance. I know it's expensive sometimes and it's hard. And, you know, we talk a little bit about, you know, when you raise institutional capital, they have different kind of insurances that they want for officers and directors and so forth. And all of it, you know, maybe doesn't seem like something you needed when you were early in the company because you were just moving fast and breaking stuff. I got to tell you, it's so important, but you got to find an insurer who you can actually work with. And so I think this is an opportunity for a lot of people to not only learn about the business of insurance, which CoverWallet is in, but also as customers, like, where do I go to get my insurance? And this is, of course, B2B. This is a good show for you. So that conversation was obviously a very fruitful one. Another conversation that I've been having lately is with companies talking to me about the fake it till you make it thing. I did a little video on Instagram. You can follow me at Catoon or at Technori on Instagram for some of these videos. But to reiterate, I'm not saying that fake it till you make it is necessarily bad. I think when we're all getting started and you want your first meeting, the last thing you want is those people you meet with to think that it's just you and some crazy idea or some scheme. The reality, though, is that if you keep the fake it till you make it, and I'm going to make an argument that doing it even in the beginning is bad, if you keep that up, your metrics are skewed. You don't really know who you are because you just keep telling people who you are going to be. And so you get lost in that middle. And then the worst part about it, which is why I would argue that even doing it in the beginning is bad, is that setting expectations is one thing. Managing them is entirely another. And if you tell people that you're a 10 person, you know, we, but it's really me and, you know, 9 freelancers, which is really like 3 freelancers, they're going to treat you like you have a 10 person company. They're going to expect that you have all these different, you know, mechanisms in place. And quite honestly, they're going to probably give you more work with higher expectations than you really deserve at that current juncture. Whereas if I went to a company and I said, listen, I'm looking to beta, I want to test the theory. If it works, I'll give you a huge discount when we actually sign everybody up. They're not going to overload you with stuff. It's going to be, the expectations are going to be on par with what they see you having. And in my opinion, that information is more valuable than that first deal. Because if you're going to be around for a long time, there'll be a lot of deals. This is the first one isn't everything. It's really about proving what you're capable of doing and testing the theory you have, which is why you're building a company. So I know people love the whole fake it till you make it, but I just want to tell you that I would caution, fake it till you make it is only good to a certain point. The Startup Inbox question is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. Here's my conversation with the co-founder of CoverWallet, Rashmi Malgiri. So coming off of a handful of insurance tech companies that we've talked to in Chicago, there's been sort of this, you know, whether it's Kin and ClearCover and some of these other ones that are local, Chicago's starting to actually like grow itself, I think, a little bit in the insure tech space, almost by accident. And so I talked to these companies and everyone is always saying to me, you know, Boston, New York, it's always East Coast. That's the only place that we ever hear it from. And it always sort of was curious to me why certain areas of the country were particularly strong in insurance, period, but insure tech in particular. And ultimately, I feel like when we hustle around all these founders, we talk about investors and founders and what are the best opportunities in tech right now, insurance has to be at the absolute top of the list next to healthcare. And I think another one that is trying to be figured out, education, just because this country needs a different, better, more economical way. And that's just speaking about the general Joe. We haven't really gotten into the business part of this. And I think, you know, it's an important topic. And so obviously, you know, CoverWallet falls into a category that I think it touches all bases, obviously the startups, which we'll get into, and then InsurTech on its own right and how it's sort of disrupting the way that businesses insure themselves. I would love to know from you what exactly CoverWallet is, one, and two, what was the attraction to starting something like CoverWallet? What was the circumstances that you were recognizing and seeing like, okay, this is something that we could absolutely not only make a successful company around, but also could do a lot of help in the industry?
Sure, yeah. So CoverWallet is an online platform for small business owners to get insurance for their business. So just to break that down a little bit, when we talk about insurance for your business, we're talking about things like general liability insurance that, you know, covers a coffee shop owner if someone slips and falls right on a spill in their office or in their retail location. We're talking about errors and omissions insurance, also known as professional liability, that would protect an accountant, either a sole proprietor or someone who had a practice, against maybe a lawsuit that said, you know, you made an error in my taxes and I owe a lot more than you originally told me. So all these different types of insurances. And what people don't necessarily know about that whole industry of business insurance is that before CoverWallet, all of this, 99.9% of all the insurance that was bought out there for small businesses was done through the local neighborhood channel, right? So your bigger carriers, you know, take it like a Travelers, et cetera, these names that you've heard of, they didn't sell direct online. And really, as a small business owner, even if you went online to look for it, and you know, maybe were delivered online results from Travelers or Liberty Mutual, et cetera, they would then direct you to your local neighborhood agent, right? So as a small business owner today, who's, by the way, on the consumer side, using Netflix and Spotify and all these like great online consumer tools, and even on the business side, is used to using QuickBooks or a platform like JustWorks to run your HR, you had no online option when it came to understanding, buying, and then managing your business insurance. So what CoverWallet is exactly that. It's a online platform where small business owners can go online, give us some information, and at the end of that actually get quotes that are viable, right? They can actually say, okay, let me compare these three different offers from these three different carriers across multiple lines of coverage that I need. Maybe it's workers' comp plus professional liability, and be able to buy it there all online without speaking to someone if they don't want to. And absolutely, if they want to, they can call in and speak to our experts to understand the coverage a bit better and answer whatever questions they might have. So that's really the core of CoverWallet. Now, that's, you know, since that original business model, we've done a couple of other things as well. We've taken that platform and we've allowed those same existing neighborhood agents to tap into the platform. So we've repurposed all of that tech that makes it super easy for the small business owner and made that available to the neighborhood agent so that when someone walks into their shop or calls them, they can actually go to CoverWallet for Agents, which is what it's called, and they can make use of the same tools that our experts use, right, to service their end customers. We've also expanded internationally, so the same small business owner in the U.S. that we service through our online platform, we also service in Europe and have been doing a trial run in Australia to do the same thing, to work with small business owners there, and we continue to expand internationally. And then finally, we've also gone into different segments of the market. So we've taken our platform and we start to specialize in startups, so companies like ours, right? Which is kind of where the idea was born, is as entrepreneurs and business owners ourselves, who are used to doing everything online, we really wanted to service, in many ways, our brother and other startup founders who wanted an online seamless way to do insurance. And so we launched CoverWallet for Startups. It's very similar to the original platform, but has a special attention paid to the unique issues that often startups and particularly venture-backed companies can face.
I think it's a brilliant analogy, to be honest. Like, as a person, I mean, I went through the struggle myself, and from a real business, not that startups aren't real, but from a large mature business standpoint, it makes obvious sense. I mean, you know, a lot of the, you mentioned it before, like the Intuit and QuickBooks and things like that, they all sort of did the heavy lifting that you had, you know, personally had to deal with. And the fact that they were the ones who sort of got all these companies to understand that you should do things online and that it's easier and it's easier to track, et cetera, et cetera. So you sort of get the piggyback off of that. But where the real, I think, unique part of this is, like, for those of us who are starting companies, and there are going to be a lot more of them, whether they become gigantic unicorns or they end up just being a really nice small business, doesn't really matter. When I got into my first business, I think I got led into, I want to say it was Hiscox or something like that, because the business type that I was doing, more or less from an underwriting standpoint, didn't exist. And so I went through all of the normal channels, and you'd go to fill out a quote, and by the end of it, now I found out, of course, like 4 or 5 quotes into it, that this was standard, not just because I was unique. You would get this like, okay, put your number here and we'll reach out to you and tell you more. And it's like, well, but I need to do this and check this off the box, this box off the list, like right now. I don't need to wait for you to call me and then retell you everything I just filled in. And so I ended up just calling people. I'm like, what do you use? What is the simplest way to go? And I ended up with Hiscox for a while with that, but that was a, you know, different business. And now when I look at these companies that are bringing things like insurance online, it's like, oh my God, like, this is like the most necessary thing, because we are, as CEOs, we're in a position where, like, you, if you can't see it, you can't manage it. And there's like these random little gaps that exist. And the idea is trying to get the least amount of them as possible so that you know your whole business and you can kind of be in one flow. And insurance for the longest time was one of those gaps where you're like, I think we're covered. I don't really know. I don't know when it is up again. I don't know what if I'm getting ripped off. Like, I have no idea where I'm at. And it's the only, one of the only parts of my business that I'm just completely lost in. So when you talk about coverstartups.com, I mean, it's a no-brainer if there was one place for all of us in the growth company space to be like, okay, that's where I'm going to go. This is why. What do you think is the big reason that for growth companies in particular, they need a separate set of coverage?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think it really starts at the beginning, and you highlighted it. For a lot of these startup companies, they don't fit neatly into an underwriting box, right? So you do need someone who comes from that industry, who can understand and then correspond with the carriers, and that's really where we specialize, is our advisors are very good at taking, you know, whatever it might be, Uber for massages, right? And actually breaking that down and explaining to a carrier, you know, where, you know, what collection of codes that might fit under, how we could do this, et cetera, right? And exactly to your point, I think, you know, your startup founders can be, you need more visibility, you need clarity, and I think you want to interact with something that's a little bit removed from kind of the old guard of carriers being very strict in their underwriting boxes and even their coverage. So you need kind of that personal touch, and that's what we provide at Cover Startups. Now, in terms of like additional coverage, it tends to be the same stuff. Like, at the end of the day, you need professional liability coverage. The one thing that you'll see startups need more often than sort of your Main Street retail small business is directors and officers insurance. So particularly when you're venture-backed and you've taken money, that VC firm will want you or require you to have directors and officers insurance. And it can get very expensive if you don't have someone who's kind of advocating or looking at it for you. And so I think that's really where we provide a lot of support and a value add to founders.
As an aside, the Uber for massages is called Lisa App, just for those out there who are wondering. It really is. There's a company that's called Lisa App, and they do a fantastic job of basically Uber for massage. Aside from that, I also think it's always funny to me. This is literally just a side comment, but like the venture system, talking about the point where a lot of venture-backed companies are required or at least asked to do directors and officers insurance, it always makes me kind of laugh because I deal with all of these institutions all the time, and it's like part of the, and I don't dispute that you need to have that insurance by any stretch, but I just think it's funny because a lot of these companies, the reason that they were able to grow so rapidly and they were able to sort of do things that attracted you to want to invest in them is the fact that they don't spend money on all the stuff that a lot of the mature companies do, for good or for worse. And I've always got a kick out of them. I'm like, okay, so now we're giving you real money and you have to, start acting a certain way. We need the books to be done this way. We need, non-GAAP, blah, 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 blah. And then it's like, well, wait a minute. If you were going to do that, we should have raised like an additional $5 million. Like, we asked for too little money because now they all want us to act a certain way, which we did not factor the costs of doing that into the raise. And it's an interesting conversation, to be honest, that we've had with founders in the past where it's like, there's like the amount you need to raise for your run rate. There's an amount you need to raise for future growth. There's an amount you need to raise to protect for any sort of financial uncertainty or needing to bridge your next raise, whatever. You need to have some room. Oh, by the way, you also need to raise extra money to become quote unquote legitimate, because the way you're operating right now attracts investors. But once they actually give you your money, they want a whole bunch of other guarantees, which you currently are not structured to pay for.
You're so right. That's really an interesting point. But yeah, I guess there's good advice out there for founders, which is when they ask you what you need the money for, you should also tack onto any stipulations or requirements you're going to tack onto the term sheet around reporting.
Oh, for sure.
Right? I totally agree with you.
Like, lead with who pays the legal bills on this? That's my lead question. Like, are you or am I? Because if I am, I'm raising another $150,000 because I know that that's what this is going to cost. So I'm curious from your end, what attracted you? Obviously, I understand like why you built and why you guys are working on Cover Wallet, obviously. But personally, I'm curious just to see, like, were you in insurance? Was that like a big thing for you growing up and you were like aware of the business? Or is it something where you just see an opportunity and you jump on it?
I love that. Was I into insurance as a kid?
No, I know a person who is. We have a company on the show here, Kyle Nakasugi from ClearCover, and he's on here, and he's like, well, I had a bunch of friends who worked in insurance in college, and then I got a job, and I think it was American Family, and then he worked his way up, and he was like, his whole life has been insurance. It's like, I guess there are people out there.
Right, no, I don't doubt it. Yes, neither my co-founder nor I are from the insurance industry. So we honestly saw an opportunity just in being really experience-oriented entrepreneurs and feeling like there was room to improve this experience for small business owners, right? Like, having gone through it before and you've gone through it, you go through it and you say, man, it's got to be better than this, right? It's everything, there's a joke, right? It's easy to predict the future. Anything that hasn't gone online will.
Yeah.
And so really in doing this, it was, can we actually be the impetus for this to happen? And I'll tell you, it's not as simple as, hey, just slap up a website, right? There was no existing API infrastructure among the carriers. That sort of mentality of, I'll tell you that we were up against a mentality among many carriers in 2015 when we started the company that, in quotes, the online customer was a bad customer. We would hear that from major insurance companies saying that, these are only folks that couldn't get insurance through their neighborhood agent, and now they're lurking in the shadows of the internet trying to get a quote. So no, we're not going to do this, right? That is vastly changed. I'm sure you know that, but that was a prominent storyline 4 years ago, right? So it was the belief that it had to be better, which I think is a no-brainer, but then also the belief that, like, you know, we might be able to actually push this change, right, through technology and showing results and showing that our loss ratios are good, that, you know, the customer isn't a bad customer. This is simply where the market is going. There's a lot of conviction about, you know, basically this is going to work that really prompted us to do it.
What are sort of the components to this that enable you to do what a lot of these larger carriers couldn't do? Because I had a recent guest on the show, not in insurance, but actually in sort of a, call it carrier. They're competing against, not really competing against, they're working underneath and with and against groups like T-Mobile. And I actually think that there's a lot of kind of analogy there in the sense, there's some parallel there in the sense that the entire business model of the larger groups, the pre-existing, you know, T-Mobile carriers of the world, is their sunken cost, and the way that they make sure they get their returns is very, very set up. The way that they market, the way that they reach the community through their stores, everything is very set up. And so if you were to add a disruptive component to it, it honestly just doesn't work for a lot of them. And so there's a huge opportunity, but at the same time, there's a lot of challenges, and you mentioned that sort of with the APIs, and there was no existing infrastructure for that. What is it about your model and the way that you operate that gives you that advantage?
Great question. So definitely for starters, you have your typical crossing the chasm issue, right? Which is they have their existing channel conflict, right? They've relied on this network of neighborhood agents. And it would be very difficult for some of these carriers to go online without threatening that. So that was definitely part of the storyline as well in 2015. I think a lot, some of that has changed. But just internally, you have that issue for any one of these carriers. Moreover, from an economic standpoint, some carriers, or many of them, you know, they don't do all the different coverages, right? So if you're a floral shop, for example, you need your typical general liability just to cover your retail location. You also need commercial auto to cover that van that's doing deliveries, right? You may even, depending on your class of business, you may even be recommended that you have professional liability in case something goes wrong and then you get sued for that. And, you know, when it comes to these different carriers, it's definitely the exception to find a carrier that can give you all that different coverage, right? So you're almost in need of an aggregator to support that customer. If you really took a customer-centric viewpoint and not a product-centric viewpoint, it's really a company like CoverWall that is customer-centered and will work with all the different providers of those insurance and bring them together to service the customer. And so when you think about sunk costs, right, like, is it worth it to you to actually go after and market to this customer when you can only do the professional liability piece of it, right, when you can only do the general liability piece of it?
Yep.
And then the third piece of this is really, you know, DNA of a company, right? What carriers are very good at is underwriting and paying claims. That's what their specialty is, right? It is not around marketing the end consumer, particularly in business. Who they were marketing to, let's be clear, was the agent,
yeah.
Right? They were really marketing the agents to get them to use this carrier versus that carrier. So this kind of, you know, end customer marketing on the business side is not really their specialty. And then to go along with that, sort of customer-facing product enhancements, right? So even when they do, have a customer-facing relationship, say even if it's just on billing, it's still paper-based. Many of them will not accept credit cards. So they just haven't really made the shift towards customer centricity. And again, that's a DNA issue. Will happen over time, maybe, but they're not there yet.
I love the remark about the DNA piece of this. I think it's one that is massively understated, and it's not just about insurance. It goes across almost everything. When we talk to tech companies left and right, it comes back to, you know, we, like, let's look at two different versions. There's the startup company that's flat out disrupting the old, you know, old guard, and they have no interest in working with them. They have no need to work with them. They have to literally, in most cases, create their own market, which hopefully, to your point, should be their tactical advantage. However, they usually are weaker in your case, underwriting. They're the ones that kind of struggle sometimes with the government stuff and sort of compliance issues and a lot of data security and just stuff that is, you know, quote unquote, grown up stuff. And, you know, whether they raise enough money to figure it out and hire the right people and find it is sort of the telltale whether or not the company will make it, or will they just be acquired by, you know, one of the big conglomerates that is trying to delve into digital, whatever you want to call it. Then there's the other side of the coin, which I think is really important for people listening to understand, is that maybe you're competing, indirectly, but at some point you need to work with the larger, you know, sort of longstanding mature company. And if your sweet spot is the DNA of digital and understanding your digital native, you know exactly how to reach the people, you know how to make them feel safe and secure. And you also recognize the need for all of the underwriting and compliance things to be on point. But are you able or willing to accept the DNA of the larger groups, which have that down so well? I think if more companies looked at this the way that you have sort of displayed it, I think that there's a lot more flexibility there, because you're in a situation where, I'm not saying that this is what you want to do, but there, you're in a situation where you could build this company, you could build CoverWallet ultimately into its own, you know, Allstate. It could be gigantic, or it could be acquired by another company, or it could be a JV and strategic partner of another company, because you recognize the importance of what they do and the importance of what you do, and they are unique. And I think that's one thing that a lot of founders I talk to, even very successful founders and CEOs, they sort of miss this. Like, it's like you're either one or the other. It's binary to them. And I often caution them to be a little bit more open to the understanding of, like, you can do this really well. That doesn't make you better or them better. It's just you're better at this. And I just think it's really interesting the way that you identified that the DNA for you is unique and lends you to a position where it probably will be easier and more effective for you to capture your target audience versus them trying to target your same audience, which gives you runway to get this company up and running. Then once you start dealing with offering, you know, the underwriting scenarios and being smart about, you know, what you will cover, what you won't cover, and how the actual money is sort of managed and how your, you know, payouts are handled and all this other stuff. What are you guys doing on that end to make sure that you are sort of equal to the powers that are currently existing?
Yeah, so we are, you know, I'll just say we're a platform, right, that sits in between the customer and the market, yep. The carriers. I'll say that there is just as much attention paid to the carrier side of it as there is to the customer side. They're absolutely a part of this, right? So thank you for recognizing that we are really a piece of an overall ecosystem that we value ourselves very much on our ability to partner and to partner where we're good at something and to take advantage of our partners where they're good at something. So. Yeah. These are not, you know, these are not like plug and play APIs. These are, yes, they're APIs that we've built, but there are weekly calls with our partners to discuss what's working, what's not working. And in terms of, you know, really the economic model of CoverWallet is very similar to what a, you know, the neighborhood agents, right? You sell a policy and you have a commission rate that you earn as part of that policy. We're working under the same terms as those neighborhood agents. We're no different in terms of our economic model.
So one of the things I think would be interesting here is to look forward even a couple of years as more companies are sort of understanding of the digital first approach. What do you, like, it's kind of a 1A, 1B question. What do you see the future of insurance looking like, whether it's individual or it's business, with regard to technology? And then what are some of the things you guys need to get absolutely right in order for this to be just a home, just grand slam success?
Yeah. Can you say that 1A part again?
Yeah. The 1A part is, you know, just in general, what do you see the future of insurance buying looking like, whether that's B2C or B2B?
Yeah. So I think let me give you some context here, right? I think that people are often surprised by what I shared at the top of this interview, right? That most of this premium still runs through neighborhood agents and it's still very much offline. People probably are surprised by that because they're so used to seeing commercials to go online and buy auto insurance in the personal space. But I'll also add in that even in, you know, B2C in the personal space for insurance, really auto is the only one that's moved online. A little bit of home, obviously renters with Lemonade, but that's it. So, I mean, other coverages, for by and large, home insurance is not online. And so, you know, overall insurance, whether it's B2C or B2B, is it really takes companies like ours to push it to the online model. That being said, one of the reasons that auto is online and others aren't, or even business isn't, is because the underwriting for auto is fairly simple. Everyone answers the same questions around age and gender and car make and model and VIN number. It's a very short list of questions. It's primarily the same. Now, go to the other end of the spectrum, and as soon as you select that you're, let's say, an accountant, you get one set of questions. But if you were to say you're Uber for massages, you're going to get a whole other set of questions, right? So that's one of the key reasons it hasn't gone online in the first place. It's very difficult to standardize. But to your question, and I'm getting there, one of the ways that this is going to go online is through customer education, right? So it's very difficult to navigate those questions online if you don't actually know what the context is and why they're asking these questions. So, really, I think part of the next wave of CoverWallet, a lot of these insurance startups that are doing anything outside of commercial auto, is to educate online more. So you look at a QuickBooks, for example. I mean, they're amazing. Intuit in general, TurboTax, right? The wealth of information that you can find there to self-educate that then allows you the comfort of going through a do-it-yourself process online is key. So that's something that we're continuously working on, is how do we, we want to make this easy for customers to call, to do this online without calling. If they want to call, absolutely, but we don't want the scenario that I had to call because I couldn't figure it out myself, right? How do we enable them to actually do it themselves? And I think education and content that helps you understand the context behind questions and why we're recommending this coverage, and no, we're not just trying to recommend initial coverage, right? Businesses like yours buy. A typical claim looks like this. The percentage of companies out there that have a claim like this that also look like you. So really, I think education in this space is going to become more and more important as this moves online.
I totally agree with you. I think this is like the scary part of the conversation we have with people. We recently had this in a real estate space. when I say to people, like, is this the one of the things that kind of removes the agent or the traditional agency model from the mix? And there's pushback. We talked about this with realtors. Is this something, in particular business, but even home? Is this a technology platform that eventually, the naughty people will say it's taking jobs away, and the people who are kind of forward thinking are like, well, but this is going to happen regardless. Like, this is where we're going. Like, it's not intentional. This is reality. Like, the user is tired of it. And one of the areas that I think is particularly interesting, obviously in real estate, but more specifically in insurance, is, and you really hit on this, was the availability of data, the availability of information online. There is, and obviously I'm like in the thick of it because I live and breathe in the tech scene. So it's a little different for me than say my parents. But the catch here is nothing on this earth irritates me more than when I have a call or I meet with an agent, whether it's a realtor or it's insurance or it's any other thing. And there's information that I have filled out and sent to your company. I know it because I was online. I had to sign up for an email. I filled out all this stuff. And you're still asking me these same questions. And it's like the human element of this hasn't caught up to where, like, the agents, and this also happens in credit when you're trying to sign up for money and financing. It's like, we just did this. Like, I spent 20 minutes on my phone filling out this information, and now here I am meeting you, and you didn't read the notes. You didn't address me in a way that was conducive to us getting this done faster. And that's the part where the digital part of this, I think, whether it's the users who choose it or it's the operators like yourself who put this in play, I just think there's this obviously a gigantic opportunity, but I think that there's a serious need for the tech to catch up with the practice, because we have all this information. It's just the way that it's being used, I feel like, is not being used adequately. And I'm thinking, when I saw CoverWallet, my immediate thought was, ooh, finally there's a process, a person who's actually going to take responsibility for making sure that all the necessary information was fielded and then applied before I had to do anything else.
Right. Yep. As an aside, as you were saying, that's one of your biggest irritations. I have a very similar irritation when it comes to the healthcare system, right?
Oh, like, my God,
you sit in the lobby, you fill out pieces of paper, you hand them back in, and then you meet the doctor who then reads back to you your answers.
Or worse yet, they don't read it back to you. They just ask you as if you never, like, we didn't just spend 20 minutes, which I honestly believe at this point, speaking specifically about the doctor thing, but this goes across, like, you could buy a car, it's the same thing. I think that they just hand you a wad of paperwork because they know that they're late and that you're going to have to spend 20 minutes. And if I give you something to do with your time, then you won't complain. Like, I don't think they have any, I don't think they even use any of it. They just, it's like fire paper. And they just sit you there. I'm like, here, fill this out. It'll occupy you.
Right. They should just like have a sign that says, log into your Instagram account.
Seriously. Yeah. Or like pay me for a survey. Like, if you're going to do it, knock a little bit off the premium. You know what I mean? No, this is, I think this is really cool, really fascinating. I think there's going to be a lot more businesses like this in different spaces that are sort of like, listen, we get it. Big companies, big co doesn't quite understand, you know, the actual digital native component and how younger people shop. We do. We're specializing in it. We'll make this seamless for you. And I just think it's the faster you get to the metrics you need to be successful, the better it is for everybody, because the amount of time and confusion, I mean, you know, like just to cite an example of like a real problem in insurance for me, you know, we were running an event, I want to say it's like 2 years ago, and we had different insurance carriers, the whole nine yards at this point, different company, in fact. And we were properly insured for our normal day to day, but then we decided to do a special event, which is outside of our normal events. So therefore outside of the event coverage, and the number of people there and where it was going to be was totally different from all the stuff we usually did that everyone had approved. And we're like 2 weeks in, and I get a notification saying basically like, oh yeah, you're not covered. And I was like, what? How is that possible? And we had to pick up the phone, and I had to go outside of my own insurance carrier and find another insurer to double down on a single event and go through. I mean, it was hours on the phone trying to find someone who would be like, yes. And in the end, we weren't doing anything crazy. It was just like a normal, you know, fest of sorts. It wasn't even like a fest. It was just like an outdoor party. And it was a wedding without the marriage. That's really what it was. And yeah. It was a nightmare. And I remember sitting at the exact time, I was like, it's so painful. It's almost worth just not being insured and just risking it, because it was so painful. Obviously, we did not do that.
Yeah, that was also one of the reasons we started the company. Like, there's a massive underinsurance issue going on.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to do it.
There has to be a ton of companies that are operating with, you know, not just undercovered because they don't know, but like flat out, like we're not covered because we don't care, because the process is impossible.
Right.
This is interesting.
Right. It's too exhausting. So you go, okay, I don't care.
Totally. I guess my last question is for you, is just as a founder and a person, like, how do you navigate a world where you're the expert in this area, but you have to work with somebody else who's the expert in their area, and you've got to sort of manage like what you're like. You understand very clearly, obviously, your role in this business transaction, and to build a company in that narrow scope is very challenging. How do you manage that internally with your company, building up, making sure everyone knows like, this is what we do, this is who we are, and we're going to stay on this point?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the guiding principle here is customer centricity, right? And there's a number of metrics that we look at. You know, we were first starting the company, it was about time to quote. We compared ourselves against the typical neighborhood agent who we saw, who, you know, just as mystery shopping would take anywhere from 2 weeks to never get back to us at all. So that was the number to beat, right? We've obviously gone beyond that. We provide instant quotes, but there's a number of metrics like that we judge ourselves against that we really say represent a flawless customer experience or a Spotify-like or Netflix experience. So that's the standard we hold ourselves to. Now, that being said, that can get ruined by anything up the chain, right? It can get ruined by manual underwriting from a carrier who reaches out to a customer and asks a bunch of questions instead of working through CoverWallet and their system, right? It can get ruined by choosing to work with the you know, big company way of billing a customer through paper-based bills, as opposed to going to the set it and forget it autopay system that a Spotify or Netflix would have, right? So you wind up actually touching, when you're just dealing with that very last mile, you have to be accountable for everything upstream, right? Because if anything upstream goes wrong, it'll affect that end customer experience. So we stay focused on that last mile and the experience of the customer, but I'll just say that we have to be vigilant about everything in between. So just going back to, like, you know, we have weekly calls with a lot of our partners because we're highlighting these issues, right? We look at individual accounts and we say, why did it take, you know, a week to get back to this person with a quote? Why wasn't it instantaneous? And we'll actually trace that down. So maybe outside of our quote unquote expertise, right? But if it's an underwriting issue, we'll have a conversation about that, and we'll try to fix it or work with the carriers so that doesn't happen again. But yeah, that's the way we approach it. Stay focused on customer facing metrics, but be accountable for anything that might impact that metric.
Well, yeah, I was going to say it's incredibly crucial that you're handling that, because the problems ultimately that these bigger companies are having, which is what you're solving, is that they do not necessarily understand. We'll call it an interpretation. They do not quite understand the interpretation of what they do behind the scenes and how it appears and how it comes out to the customer. That's like literally their problem, that they have, you know, whether it's a gap in time between a quote getting called and so on, or it's, you know, the understanding of a policy or understanding of whether or not you do fall under coverage or you don't, or whatever the case may be. Those are the intricacies that they maybe do really well behind the scenes, but like it is the outcome of that that is misunderstood or misinterpreted to the users. And you are, for all intensive purposes, an interpreter to the end user of what Big Co talk sounds like. And so, I mean, obviously for you, I mean, you really have to become an expert in making sure that you can take all the mumbo jumbo that gets brought up in the big corp in the carrier office and then turn around and speak that in a very easy layman term for the user so that they understand it as seamlessly as possible. And then, you know, obviously continue their customer journey as quickly as possible.
You got it. Yeah.
This is fascinating. Where do people go? Obviously, start to sign up with you guys, but in more particular, it's coverstartups.com for the growth companies. For the rest of them, where do they go to follow up and learn more about this?
Just coverwallet.com.
Coverwallet.com. Well, I hope people check it out. Rashmi, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us on the show today.
You got it. Thank you for having me. Appreciate
of course.
It.
To invest in startups, download past episodes or apply to pitch at the Startup Showcase, check out technori.com. Stay connected by following us on social at technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.